Mr. Sponge's Sporting Tour by R.S. Surtees. Chapter 53. Pudding Pot Bower. We must now back the train a little and have a look at Jog and Company. Mr. and Mrs. Jog had had another squabble after Mr. Sponge's departure in the morning, Mr. Jog reproving Mrs. Jog for the interest she seemed to take in Mr. Sponge, as shown by her going to the door to see him amble away on the piebald hack. Mrs. Jog justified herself on the score of Gustavus James, with whom she was quite sure Mr. Sponge was much struck, and to whom, she made no doubt, he would leave his ample fortune. Jog, on the other hand, wheezed and puffed into his frill, and reasserted that Mr. Sponge was as likely to live as Gustavus James, and to marry, and to have a bushel of children of his own, while Mrs. Jog rejoined that he was sure to break his neck, breaking their necks being, as she conceived, the inevitable end of fox hunters. Jog, who had not prosecuted the sport of hunting long enough to be able to gainsay her assertion, though he took especial care to defer the operation of breaking his own neck as long as he could, fell back upon the expense and inconvenience of keeping Mr. Sponge and his three horses, and his saucy servant, who had taught their domestics to turn up their noses at his diet table. Above all, at his stick jaw and undeniable small beer. So they went fighting and squabbling on, till at last the scene ended, as usual, by Mrs. Jogglebury bursting into tears, and declaring that Jog didn't care a farthing either for her or her children. Jog then bundled off to try and fashion a most incorrigible-looking knotty blackthorn into a head of Lord Chancellor Lyndhurst. He afterwards took a turn at a hazel that he thought would make a Joe Hume. Having occupied himself with these until the children's dinner hour, he took a wandering, snatching sort of meal, and then put on his paletot with a little hatchet in the pocket, and went off in search of the raw material in his own and the neighboring hedges. Evening came, and with it came Jog, laden as usual with an armful of gibbies. But the shades of night followed evening ere there were any tidings of the sporting inmates of his house. At length, just as Jog was taking his last stroll prior to going in for good, he espied a pair of vacillating white breeches coming up the avenue with a clearly drunken man inside them. Jog stood straining his eyes, watching their movements, wondering whether they would keep the saddle or come off. Whenever the breeches seemed irrevocably gone, they invariably recovered themselves with a jerk or a lurch. Jog now saw it was leather on the piebald, and though he had no fancy for the man, he stood to let him come up, thinking to hear something of Sponge. Leather, in due time, saw the great looming outline of our friend, and came staring and shaking his head, endeavoring to identify it. He thought at first it was the squire. Next he thought it wasn't. Then he was sure it wasn't.
"Oh, it's you, old boy, is it?"
at last exclaimed he, pulling up beside the large holly against which our friend had placed himself.
"It's you, old boy, is it?"
repeated he, extending his right hand and nearly overbalancing himself, adding as he recovered his equilibrium,
"I thought it was the old woolpack at first,"
nodding his head toward the house.
"Well,"
spluttered he, pulling up and sitting, as he thought, quite straight in the saddle.
"We've had the finest day's sport and the most equitable drink I've enjoyed for many a long day. Lord bless us, what a gent that Sir Harry is. He's the sort of man that should have money. I'm blowed if I were queen, but I'd melt all the great blubber-headed fellows like this here Crowdie down, and make one sich man as Sir Harry out of the hole on 'em. Beer! They don't know what beer is there. Nothing but the wary strongest hail, instead of the puzzin one gets at this awful mean place that looks like nothing in the weshin of brewer's haprons. Oh, I humbly begs pardon," exclaimed he, dropping from his horse onto his knees on discovering that he was addressing Mr. Crowdie. I thought it was Robbins, the mole catcher. Thought it was Robbins, the mole catcher, growled Jog. What have you to do with poof, Robbins, the mole catcher? Jog boiled over with indignation. At first he thought of kicking Leather, a feat that his suppliant position made extremely convenient, if not tempting. Prudence, however, suggested that Leather might have him up for assault. So he stood puffing and wheezing and eyeing the blear-eyed, brandy-nosed old drunkard with, as he thought, a withering look of contempt. And then, though the man was drunk and the night was dark, he waddled off, leaving Mr. Leather on his once white breeches knees. If Jog had had reasonable time, say an hour or an hour and 20 minutes, to improvise it in, he would have said something uncommonly sharp. As it was, he left him with the pertinent inquiry we have recorded. What have you to do with Robbins, the mole catcher? We need hardly say that this little incident did not at all ingratiate Mr. Sponge with his host, who re-entered his house in a worse humor than ever. It was insulting a gentleman on his own territory, bearding an Englishman in his own castle. Not to be borne, puff, said Jog. It was now nearly 5 o'clock, Jog's dinner hour, and still no Mr. Sponge. Mrs. Jog proposed waiting half an hour. Indeed, she had told Susan the cook to keep the dinner back a little, to give Mr. Sponge a chance, who could not possibly change his tight hunting things for his evening tights in the short space of time that Jog could drop off his loose-flowing garments, wash his hands, and run the comb through his lank, candle-like hair. 5 o'clock struck, and Jog was just applying his hand to the fat red-and-black worsted bell-pull when Mrs. Jog announced what she had done. Put off the dinner? Put off the dinner? Repeated he, blowing furiously into his clean shirt frill, which stuck up under his nose like a handsaw. Put off the dinner, wheeze! Put off the dinner, puff! I wish you wouldn't do such wheeze things without consulting me. Well, but my dear, you couldn't possibly sit down without him, observed Mrs. Jog mildly. Possibly, puff! Possibly, wheeze! Repeated Jog. There's no possibly in the matter, retorted he, blowing more furiously into the frill. Mrs. Jog was silent. A man should conform to the hours of the house, observed Jog, after a pause. Well, but my dear, you know hunters are always allowed a little law, observed Mrs. Jog. Law? Law? Wheeze! Retorted Jog. I never want any law, thinking of Smiler versus Jogglebury. 5:30 came, and still no Mr. Sponge, and Mrs. Jog, thinking it would be better to arrange to have something hot for him when he came than to do further battle with her husband, gave the bell the double ring, indicative of bring dinner. Nay! When you have so long, growled Jog, taking the other tack, you might as well have a little longer, snorting into his frill as he spoke. Mrs. Jogglebury said nothing, but slipped quietly out, as if after her keys, to tell Susan to keep so-and-so in the meat screen and have a few potatoes ready to boil against Mr. Sponge arrived. She then sidled back quietly into the room. Jog and she presently proceeded to that all-important meal, Jog blowing out the company candles on the side table as he passed. Jog munched away with a capital appetite, but Mrs. Jog, who took the bulk of her lading in at the children's dinner, sat trifling with the contents of her plate, listening alternately for the sound of horses' hooves outside and for nursery squalls in. Dinner passed over, and the fruity port and sugary sherry soon usurped the places that stick-jaw pudding and cheese had occupied. Mr. Poof Sponge must be wheeze, I think,
observed Jog, hauling his great silver watch out like a bucket from his fob, on seeing that it only wanted 7:10.
"Oh, Jog!" exclaimed Mrs. Jog, clasping her beautiful hands and casting her bright beady eyes up to the low ceiling. "Oh, Jog, what's the matter now? Poof! Wee!" exclaimed our friend, reddening up and fixing his stupid eyes intently on his wife.
"Oh, nothing," replied Mrs. Jog, unclasping her hands and bringing down her eyes.
"Oh, nothing," retorted Jog. "Nothing," repeated he. "Ladies don't get into such tantrums for nothing."
"Well then, Jog, I was thinking if anything should have happened, Mr. Sponge, how Gustavus James will have lost his chance."
And thereupon she dived for her lace-fringed pocket handkerchief and hurried out of the room. But Mrs. Jog had said quite enough to make the cauldron of Jog's jealousy boil over, and he sat staring into the fire, imagining all sorts of horrible devices in the coals and cinders, and conjuring up all sorts of evils, until he felt himself possessed of 120,000 devils.
"I'll get shot of this chap at last," said he, with a knowing jerk of his head and a puff into his frill, as he drew his thick legs under his chair and made a semicircle to get at the bottle. "I'll get shut of this chap," repeated he, pouring himself out a bumper of the syrupy port and eyeing it at the composite candle. He drained off the glass and immediately filled another. That too went down. Then he took another, and another, and another, and seeing the bottle get low, he thought he might as well finish it. He felt better after it. Not that he was a bit more reconciled to our friend Mr. Sponge, but he felt more equal to cope with him. He even felt as if he could fight him. There did not, however, seem to be much likelihood of his having to perform that ceremony, for 9 o'clock struck and no Mr. Sponge, and at 1:30 Mr. Crowdy stumped off to bed. Mrs. Crowdy, having given Bartholomew and Susan a dirty pack of cards to play with to keep them awake till Mr. Sponge arrived, went to bed too, and the house was presently tranquil. It, however, happened that that amazing prodigy, Gustavus James, having been out on a sort of eleemosynary excursion among the neighboring farmers and people, exhibiting as well his fine blue-feathered hat as his astonishing proficiency in "baa, baa, black sheep," and "abin and itchard," getting seed cake from one, sponge cake from another, and toffee from a third, was troubled with a very bad stomach ache during the night, of which he soon made the house sensible by his screams and his cries. Jog and his wife were presently at him, and as Jog sat in his white cotton nightcap and flowing flannel dressing gown in an easy chair in the nursery, he heard the crack of the whip and the prolonged "yeep" of Mr. Sponge's arrival. Presently, the trampling of a horse was heard passing round to the stable. The clock struck 1. "Pretty hour for a man to come home to a strange house," observed Mr. Jog, for the nurse, or Murray Ann, or Mrs. Jog, or anyone that liked, to take up. Mrs. Jog was busy with the rhubarb and magnesia, and the others said nothing. After the lapse of a few minutes, the clank, clank, clank of Mr. Sponge's spurs was heard as he passed round to the front, and Mr. Jog stole out onto the landing to hear how he would get in. Thump, thump, thump went Mr. Sponge on the door. Rap, tap, tap, he went at it with his whip.
"Come in, sir, come in," exclaimed Bartholomew from the inside.
Presently the shooting of bolts, the withdrawal of bands, and the opening of doors were heard.
"Not gone to bed yet, old boy," said Mr. Sponge as he entered.
"No, sir," snuffled the boy, who had a head cold. "Been sitting up for you."
puff and blow gone?" asked Mr. Sponge, depositing his hat and whip on a chair. The boy gave no answer. "Is old Bellows the Mend gone to bed?" asked Mr. Sponge in a louder voice. "The Charmin's gone," replied the boy, who looked upon his master, the chairman of the Sturrett Stiff Union, as the impersonification of all earthly greatness. "Damn your impudence," growled Jog, slinking back into the nursery. "I'll pay you off, poof," added he with a jerk of his white night-capped head. "I'll bellows to mend you.
Please!"
End of chapter 53.